From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. President Trump has made big promises on immigration during his campaign and first few weeks in office, including an end to birthright citizenship and the mass deportation of undocumented migrants. And while he hasn't achieved either goal yet, that has not stopped fear and confusion from spreading through the immigrant communities in our region.
Immigration enforcement officials have targeted certain large cities, and a few weeks ago, ICE raided a Philadelphia car wash and arrested seven people. And farm and food industry workers say they are scared to show up at work. DACA recipients, the so-called Dreamers, also say they fear being swept up in the immigration crackdown.
So how are White House immigration policies impacting our local economies? We have two stakeholders with us today to unpack all of that. Email your thoughts to studio2@whyy.org. That's all coming up after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he is rescheduling a trip to Saudi Arabia, which hosted U.S.-Russia talks today. The bilateral meeting signaled a normalization of ties between Moscow and Washington. NPR's Joanna Kakissis reports from Kyiv that Zelensky says his country wants to be an equal partner in any negotiation to end Russia's nearly three-year-old war on Ukraine.
Speaking to reporters in Istanbul during an official visit, Zelensky said Ukraine wants the war to end more than anyone, but with a fair deal. You can discuss whatever you want, Zelensky said, but you cannot make a decision about ending the war in Ukraine without Ukraine. He says Russia is pushing for Ukraine to decrease the size of its military and accept the loss of occupied territories. We did not agree to this during our most difficult moments, Ukraine's leader said. Why would we do so now? The Trump administration's special envoy for Ukraine and Russia is expected in Kyiv on Thursday. Joanna Kakissis, NPR News, Kyiv.
Lebanon has regained control over nearly a dozen areas in its southern regions. Israeli forces were supposed to withdraw entirely under ceasefire terms, ending the war with Hezbollah. But as NPR's Hadil Al-Shalchi explains, Israel is keeping some of its forces based in Lebanon.
The Lebanese military said it has moved into 11 locations in southern Lebanon where the Israeli military has withdrawn from. It said it was surveying the damage done by the war. It said it was coordinating with United Nations peacekeepers. But on Monday, Israel said it will remain in five locations in southern Lebanon to protect communities in the north of Israel. Lebanese officials and Hezbollah said this violates the terms of the ceasefire, calling for Israel to withdraw completely. Lebanese President Joseph Aoun said that the ceasefire agreement, quote, must be respected and that Israel cannot be trusted. Hadil Al-Shalchi, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The death toll in Kentucky after severe winter storms and flooding is at least 12 and expected to rise. The state's governor, Andy Beshear, describes what residents and emergency responders are up against.
We got about an inch this morning, which we did not expect, and we've got anywhere from 2 to 8 inches that are going to hit across the state. We've already been out there doing boat rescues in the middle of snowstorms, and this is going to further complicate it. We've got over 340 just state and federal roads that have mudslides or other issues with them, and now we're going to add that snow on top of it.
Kentucky Governor Beshear speaking with NPR's Morning Edition. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Made In Cookware. Made In Cookware is crafted by chefs for use in restaurants and home kitchens around the world. Their cookware can be found at madeincookware.com. This is NPR.
And welcome, everybody, to Studio 2. Another week of our program here at WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. So I'm going to go right in. Today on the show.
Go right in.
We're going to talk about something that has become a flashpoint in the country and in our region, especially in recent weeks. That topic is immigration. President Donald Trump promised the largest mass deportation effort this country has ever seen, and the rollout to executing on that promise has already begun. It's having an impact locally. Just a couple of weeks ago, ICE detained 7 people at a North Philadelphia car wash. ICE also showed up at a Puerto Rican restaurant. They were turned away, and now there is panic. Philadelphia's economy relies heavily on immigrants. We all know this. Many of them are undocumented. And now there are reports that some undocumented workers are staying home. They're missing work. They're keeping their kids out of school. So today we have two very knowledgeable folks with very differing views on this topic. And we're going to dig into what the new immigration policies could mean for our city's economy, our culture, our future. We'll also take a look at what tools, if any, are available to city and local municipalities to resist. And our question of the day for you, our listeners, is this: what do you think of the president's crackdown on illegal immigration? If you, your business, or your family have been personally affected, we want to hear your story. We ask that you call in 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And if you are watching on our YouTube page, hey, Studio Tubers, you can leave your question or comment in the chat.
Yeah, leave those comments in the chat. Again, the email studio2@whyy.org. We'd love to hear from you today. Yeah. Before we get to all of that, Cherry,
a trio
of local news stories. And we start with a story that is adjacent to the happenings in Washington. Philadelphia's top federal prosecutor, in a statement last night, announced that she will leave that office. Her name is Jacqueline Romero. She announced the end of her tenure effective immediately. She was appointed by Biden in 2022. She was the first woman of color to serve as Philadelphia's top federal prosecutor in our region. She did not say if she was fired or told to resign or decided to leave on her own. We do know that historically, top federal prosecutors in regions throughout the country turn over during new administrations. Mm-hmm. So that in and of itself would not be all that unusual. However, there are some unusual circumstances around this particular departure. By the way, Pennsylvania Senator Dave McCormick, a Republican, already announced earlier this month that he was establishing commissions to find candidates for U.S. attorneys in each of the 3 districts in Pennsylvania. So again, Jacqueline Romero out as the top federal prosecutor in the Philadelphia region.
Yeah, that's the Eastern District of Pennsylvania. By the way, I actually met Romero a few years back. And by the way, she is the daughter of Spanish immigrants and spent 16 years sort of working in the office mm-hmm. in the civil division, working her way up. And what's so interesting to me is there's a lot of questions. You know, how will who will fill this role here in the 3 districts in Pennsylvania? How will, you know, the office be used to possibly even investigate local officials who resist any policies? And what will this office look like in the future? So many questions we'll all be watching and waiting to see.
And speaking of that possibility,
yeah,
that it would be used to investigate local officials,
mm-hmm.
one of those officials who could be standing in the crosshairs over the next 4 years is Philadelphia District Attorney Larry Krasner.
Yes.
The question is whether he will be in that office, district attorney, for the next 4 years. And we have some news on that today.
Yeah, Larry Krasner is expected any moment to announce officially that he is seeking a 3rd term as Philadelphia district attorney. His official announcement is expected at around 12:30 p.m. today. His website has already been updated with his new campaign promises. I'll say that his announcement was expected in many ways. We had him on the show. We asked him. It was like tongue in cheek, but we kind of knew this was coming.
Yeah.
He did ramp up fundraising the end of last year. I think Larry Krasner for DA swag is already on sale. But according to
big secret there.
Yeah. So according to the announcement and his framing of his term will be a continuation of his progressive criminal justice policies, including record exonerations, crime reduction, in partnership with law enforcement partners. But what you said, Avi, sort of stands out.
Yeah.
He's also focused on the Trump administration. According to his website, quote, with right-wing extremists in Washington trying to take away our freedoms, Larry is ready to protect our freedoms by standing up to Donald Trump and his billionaire friends and ensure that everyone is held accountable under the law. He has said publicly that he will not comply with any federal orders if they believe that they do not comply with the U.S. Constitution. So he's not afraid, I guess, to upset folks in the administration. And he's made that publicly known.
Yeah, and that's why I would imagine his primary opponent, mm-hmm. who is Patrick Duggan, is going to have an uphill battle here.
Yeah.
We mentioned before that, you know, he survived a primary challenge 4 years ago mm-hmm. when murder rates were far higher. They've come way down in Philadelphia. So that vulnerability isn't there anymore. And I do imagine that a lot of folks within the Democratic Party, not speaking for the whole city, but the folks who vote in Democratic primaries will be looking for someone who is at mm-hmm. least vocally, if not willing also in up. Action, mm-hmm. willing to stand up to the administration. And so I don't think it's an opinion, really, to say that he is the favorite. He is an incumbent. Mm-hmm. It is very hard to unseat an incumbent.
And he
in a
won
primary.
By an overwhelming vote 4 years ago. So.
Twice. And I think some might be wondering, well, he's running for a third term. Would people, you know, perhaps have some issue with that? But there is precedent in Philadelphia for DAs sticking around for a long time. They're not term limited.
Yeah.
So he would not be the first to attempt to serve a third term. And so I doubt that will be a huge vulnerability for him as well. But hey, we shall see. This his opponent is potentially pretty well funded.
Yeah.
So there's some vulnerability
yeah,
there.
Yeah, and I was going to say the building trades
right.
Support Duggan, who's a former municipal court judge. But, yeah. you know, like you said, Krasner is the favorite. So we have a third story.
A third story. Well, first of all, I just want to acknowledge the top two stories were about attorneys, which I'm
yeah.
sure makes you
mm-hmm.
very happy. This is a topic that I think also fascinates you, Cherry. New Yorkers moving to Philadelphia.
Mm. Interesting.
How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, we're both
transplants.
Folks, we're transplants.
Yeah, we
so
don't have
I'm
a leg to
mad.
Stand on here.
I'm yet. Not really mad at people moving here. I think it's good for the city. It helps the city grow.
So then good news for you then. New report from StreetEasy
mm-hmm.
Analyzed Zillow search data among New Yorkers who are, you know, thinking about maybe moving somewhere else. And the place they're most likely to search for is now Philadelphia.
What?
It actually used to be Miami. I didn't even know that. But apparently Philly is now the place that New Yorkers are most eyeing if they're thinking about getting out. The draw is
getting out. I like that word, getting out.
I got out.
New York.
I lived there for about 10 months and I was out.
It's a lot there.
Well, and look, the thing that bugged me the most was the price of everything,
yeah.
including
yeah.
housing.
Mm-hmm.
And so Philadelphia is far cheaper. The median home price here is $256,000. Good luck getting a storage locker in Manhattan for that price. And so, yeah, the draw is obvious, but that was always the draw. What's interesting is that it's unseat cities like Miami and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a theory for why that might be true. I don't know. I want to
hear your theory. Go right ahead.
So I wonder if the folks that are leaving now who are thinking about leaving New York in this day and age are doing so less because they want a total lifestyle change. Like Miami's totally different climate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Car culture, blah, blah, blah. But are more looking for like a New York adjacent place to go
oh.
where they can like go to their job in New York City once or twice a
That's
week or per
it.
Month, but can mostly work remotely, but still kind of have a New York style lifestyle. Like if you live in South Philly, it's not that different from Brooklyn, but it's mm-hmm. just way cheaper.
And you can kind of have a car.
And you can
even though parking really isn't the greatest.
You can kind of have a car,
yeah.
but you can also get around other ways. I mm-hmm. feel like it's a nice landing spot for someone who's in that like hybrid work world.
Yeah, and I think the hybrid work world has changed a lot. I mean, a lot of those folks live in Delaware as well. If they want the bigger house, people have sort right. of doing those super commuters.
Sure.
And commuting is really, if you only got to go in twice a week,
yeah.
it's really not that bad to live in Philly.
Yeah, and even twice a week, like you said, it might even be twice a month.
Yeah.
Like I know people that commute to D.C., mm-hmm. They were already living in Philly, right? But then they got some job. They got to go to D.C. But the job's like, come once a
yeah.
month, just check in and you're cool. And so I wonder if that is the explanation. To be clear, the report did not like speculate
go
as
into
to
any
why.
Of that, yeah.
It was just saying that they're looking at Philly. And I'm kind of with you on this. Philadelphia used to have 2 million people. It has like 1.5 million
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I'm all about
There
growth.
Is room mm-hmm. to grow. So I think I understand it's not like a unalloyed good thing. There are problems that come from this, but I think Philadelphia can accept.
We have room.
We have room.
We have room. So we're going to be talking about immigration coming up after the break. Weigh in 888-477-9499 or email studio2@whyy.org. See you on the other side.
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. President Trump's tough immigration stance, his promises to deport millions of undocumented immigrants, helped him win the White House. And while he's falling behind on numbers of deportations, he has signed an executive order to end birthright citizenship. That is being challenged. He's also gone after asylum seekers and opened Guantanamo Bay to house unauthorized migrants since he took office.
Recently, there was also an ICE raid at a Philadelphia car wash with 7 people arrested. And there are plenty of reports of workers too scared to come to work, including New Jersey farm workers and food industry staff. Even some DACA recipients, the Dreamers, who were brought here as children, are worried they'll be targeted next.
So how are these policies affecting families and communities in our region? What impact are they having on our businesses and economy? We have 2 guests joining us in our studio who have different viewpoints. We have Anuj Gupta, CEO of the Welcoming Center. We also have Guy Shiraki, who is a former GOP nominee for Congress and a conservative commentator who writes for Broad and Liberty and Real Clear Pennsylvania. Anuj and Guy, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
And our question for you, our listeners today, what do you think of the president's crackdown on illegal immigration? If you or your family or your business has been personally affected, we would love to hear your story. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. Or hey, if you're watching on WHYY's YouTube channel, drop your comments right there in the live chat.
Yeah, so I wanted to start our conversation with a hypothetical that'll hopefully get us to the impact of immigrants on our economy. So if ICE were to round up and deport every undocumented worker in our region tomorrow, what would happen to our economy overnight? Anuj, I'll start with you. Then Guy, I'll get your comment as well.
You would see significant sectors of our economy shut down. And keep in mind that 1 out of every 5 workers, that's legal and undocumented, but 1 out of every 5 workers in the Philadelphia economy is now foreign born. And if there was an effort of that scale, you're not just affecting those that are here with undocumented status, okay? You are affecting those that came here through legal pathways. I mean, Avi, as you were making some introductory comments, you posed the question, what do you think about the crackdown on illegal immigration? This is not just a crackdown on illegal immigration. Folks that have come here from countries like Venezuela and Haiti, amongst others, over the last 2 years, are now part of this targeted effort. They came here through legal pathways, and they're having their status removed. So you would see, and we are seeing trickles of this, we are seeing anecdotal evidence, iconic places, and we can talk about this later, whether it's the Italian market, the Reading Terminal market, other important emblems of the food service economy, amongst other sectors, would start to shut down.
Yeah. Shut down.
Shut down. Total shutdown. And Guy, I know you work with a lot of businesses in Chester County and beyond. What would happen if ICE raided and just got rid of every undocumented worker? What would be the impact the next day?
Sure. So I always say at the outset, you know, my name's Shiraki. I'm married to a Czarnecki. None of our families were on the Mayflower, right? All of them came here as immigrants to be part of the American dream and participate. Look, I would just say respectfully, I don't think the premise should be either the border's wide open or we throw everybody out. I think where we can find common ground is where's the in-between. Not the Trump administration, but the Biden administration. The Biden administration suggested that as many as 8 million people came here undocumented. The Biden administration suggested that there are people who had committed crimes back in the country they came from before they came here. Others committed crimes while they were here. And in addition, there may in fact be folks here that are part of terrorist cells. So we should all agree that let's start with those folks who are here, who we don't know who they are, who may in fact be terrorists, who may in fact committed crimes where they came from, and who are committed violent crimes while they're here.
Do you think that's what's happening?
I think that's the start of it. I think that's the start of it. But I think that what happened for the last several years under the Biden administration, where their estimate is that there are 8 million undocumented people here, has not only created a safety issue, I think it's in many cases broken the safety net. It's broken the safety net in Texas. And you saw that even Democratic mayors in Denver, in Chicago, in Washington, in New York were saying, we need help. We're not prepared for this. So I think if nothing else, hitting the pause button and say, let's have a national discussion on what's happening here and how do we get back to a sense of normalcy and immigration and lawful immigration and what do we need for our economy is necessary. And I think that's what's happening now. We tried it the opposite way. It caused problems. It caused chaos.
What do you mean you tried it the opposite way?
We tried having 8 million people come in here, not through the typical immigration process.
And we're not talking about undocumented, though. We're not talking. Are we talking about the same thing here, Anuj and Guy?
Yeah, make sure we clear.
When we talk about that 8 million.
There's no question there was a surge of folks coming across the border during the Biden administration. But I want to clarify a couple things. Number one, they're coming through that avenue because we have failed as a nation to adapt our immigration policies and immigration laws to meet the economy of 2025. Our immigration laws are designed for an economy of the 60s and maybe the 90s at best. Okay, so that's the surge that we are seeing is a crisis of our own making. Mm-hmm. Secondly, if this was really about public safety, let's be clear. Number one, the data shows that crimes committed by foreign-born individuals, whether they're documented or not, is substantially lower than the native-born population. And again, if we were serious about public safety, we'd be talking about illegal guns on our streets, not undocumented people.
Well, let me ask you, let's talk about what is happening now, because I think there is some genuine confusion. Like Diana from Haverford asks, I know that blue cities are being targeted by these raids. Are red states and agricultural states also facing the same immigration crackdowns? My question for you, Anuj, because you are in this world, what is happening in Philadelphia right now? We know of this one very high-profile raid at a single car wash in North Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Not trying to diminish that, but asking, is there something broader that's actually happening right now that you can testify to?
There have been other verified arrests, sure. And they're mostly happening in public space where ICE can operate without a valid judicially issued warrant. Understand that to go into somebody's home, to go into a workplace, the threshold to obtain a warrant is still relatively high. We still are observing some rule of law in our court system. And so outside of that, what can ICE do? They can go into public spaces. They can go into a public street. A couple weekends ago, my son and I were driving back from a baseball practice in Fishtown. We made a right on Germantown Avenue off Lehigh, and we saw an ICE agent on the street.
Sure.
So their probability
is the scale of this at all unusual, though? Like, what's happening now? Is it similar to what would have happened over the last 4 years or the first Trump term?
I don't think you saw the visible presence of ICE officers. Now, that being said, the total complement of uniformed ICE officers nationwide is smaller than the Philadelphia Police Department. So we have to keep that in mind. Their infrastructure, and by the way, with all these firings happening across federal agencies, I don't think you're going to have a swarm of hires coming into Homeland Security. So there is a capacity issue that makes it difficult for them to go house by house, business by business, particularly with the warrant threshold.
Okay.
And I want to jump in here because, you know, I want to ask, even though you don't see broad swaths of folks being raided, what's the impact, though? Just the announcement of the policies and even having the law enforcement presence, what's the impact of that?
The impact is significant. And if perception becomes reality, then the goal is accomplished. If people are afraid to go into everyday civil society, if they are afraid to participate in our daily economy, then the impact will be the same. And we are seeing some manifestation of that. And you've cited the articles already,
sure,
whether it's the Italian market or farms in South Jersey. if we start to see that same kind of fear, pervasive fear, overtake economies in red states, what's going to happen to meatpacking facilities? What's going to happen with produce, both harvesting, processing, and distribution? There's no bench of native-born American workers waiting to take those jobs. Doesn't exist.
Yeah, and I want to get you into the conversation, Guy, here. I mean, when you hear this, are you seeing the same thing in the county, in Chester County and other counties, as far as the reaction of just the announcement of the policies? And in your mind, is this reaction justified?
Yeah, but I respectfully, I have to comment on a few things here. I mean, one, is either ICE overwhelming or not? Is either ICE's presence is too large or too small? You're citing that the numbers are small. You're citing that the immigration system's broken. The immigration system may be broken, but the majority of presidents in the last 20 years have been Democrats, many of whom have had Democratic Congresses. If we should have been increasing the number of folks that are here, either to be farm workers or to be engineers, then we should have addressed it. Respectfully, you don't get to break the system and then say, well, the system is broken, so we've got to allow this. What I don't understand is why it's come to this point where we have to have these raids and we have to say this because in part, too many people came in here and we don't know who they are. Mm-hmm. And too many people feel unsafe. And I can speak for myself. I can't speak for the Trump administration. I can't speak for the people who voted for Donald Trump. For myself, this is not about race or color or creed or religion or ethnic background. Again, my relatives come from everywhere. My family's relatives come from everywhere. I work with people who come from everywhere. This is a question of safety and the rule of law. And Avi, you asked earlier, what do you mean by tried it earlier? We tried it and let the border open. We tried it and said, we'll let people in and figure it out later. We tried it by saying we're going to expedite the process. And in return, 8 million people came here. Some of whom may have come here, maybe the majority of whom came here with the best of intentions.
Can I ask
some,
you a
in fact,
about
are criminals.
This?
Some, in fact, who were known terrorists. And some, in fact, have no safety net here. They have no family, no place to work. We can peel this back. You and I could probably resolve this today, mm-hmm. right? Because if you want to come here and respectfully, if you want to be an American and not participate in rallies and burn the American flag, but you want to raise a family here, you want your children to do better than you, you want to be part of the American dream, I'll work with you and we'll go fix it. But we can't just keep the door open and the windows open and have everybody come in and say, well, we'll sort it out later. We were going broke. Cities were reaching the breaking point and there were crime. To be an immigrant is not to commit a crime. Of course not. Of course not. That's ludicrous. But if you don't know who these people are, and in fact people came here to break the law, bad things happen. I'd like that number to be zero.
Well, let me ask you, though, this is a comment from Sue, who says on YouTube, we need to point out that the crackdown is not only on people who do not follow a legal path to immigration. It makes no distinction between asylum seekers who are following the legal asylum path. I mean, I still wonder what the actual rubber meets the road strategy actually is for the Trump administration, what they're doing and what they plan to do. I mean, Guy, do you feel like you have any insight into all of this? Because there is a part of me that wonders, is this just basically a large-scale intimidation tactic and that they really don't plan to do much?
So the answer is I don't know. I do think there is an element of trying, you know, we talked earlier about the relatively small size of ICE.
Yep.
Right. So the focus right now has been twofold. One is have more presence at the border to slow the flow, which has slowed down dramatically. And second, I do think it is a part of showing a presence and making noise, because I think it's sending a message that this is now something we're serious about, which I think primarily goes to two things. One is slowing the flow at the border, and two is letting people know that in the case of people who are here illegally that have committed crimes, let's go after it. Look, and the
but
other—
But what's the third step, right? Because if that is the state of play in perpetuity, where it's just we're going to make a lot of noise about this, but the fundamental system doesn't really change, then I would have to imagine in whether it's 5 years or 10 years or 15 years, we're going to be right back in this place.
Okay. Yeah, but the reality is, I keep saying, we tried it the other way and it was a dramatic failure for everyone. And respectfully, as part of asylum, again, we might all draw the line differently.
But I'm trying to understand what this new way is, besides making a lot of noise.
Well, that's step one.
Yeah.
It's like when you fight crime in the city. The first thing you do is get rid of Larry Krasner, and you say, we're not going to allow shoplifting anymore. Part of it is saying there's a new sheriff in town, there's a new approach. So I think first, let's not discount saying the border's going to be secured and we're going to try and remove people. The other part of this is the asylum system has been abused and misused. People who were in Afghanistan, who helped our soldiers and helped the NATO forces and needed to be rescued or their lives were in danger, I'll be the first one to say, let's make sure that they're safe. But if we have NGOs teaching people when you come to the border, you just say asylum and it's your golden ticket, that system's being abused. We all might draw the line differently.
The system is being abused on some level?
The system,
or we suddenly have a lot of people that suddenly need asylum.
If you want to use that word, fine, but it is only because, and this is where we agree, and just so you understand, Guy worked on the Republican side of the aisle. You were chief of staff, right?
Yes, sir.
And I was chief of staff for a Democrat from Philadelphia. And I will be the first one to say that the Democrats, for as long as Guy cited, and this is including Democratic administrations, have completely dropped the ball on this issue. Mm-hmm. Completely. And now they're running scared of it. So we are seeing people, look, people are coming here to the United States, and I still haven't heard any data cited on the preponderance of crime amongst foreign-born or undocumented individuals. That, 'cause if we were to recite that data, it would be abundantly clear that that percentage is significantly lower than the native-born population. And we are seeing violent crime rates in Philadelphia and other large cities fall at very significant rates across the country. So you cannot, there's no scenario in which you can equate our current, our sort of status quo on immigration with crime in this country. But yes, people are going through the asylum process because we have not created a system and a mechanism for them to come safely, transparently, and accessibly. That's what people want. And that is, by the way, if the two of us sat down, that's probably what we would find a lot of agreement on.
Yeah. Well, we would. Again, I just think that the number of people here illegally that commit crime should be zero. The fact that the majority of folks here are law-abiding or trying to raise their family is great. The number of people who should kill Lake and Riley should be zero. And if they're known criminals, they should have never been let in here. And I would prefer the emphasis on that. I would sooner the system be perfect. But if the system is going to be imperfect, I'd sooner somebody be stopped from coming in than allowed to come in and we pay the consequences later. And we can come back another time, Mary, with Cherry and Avi, and we can talk about crime statistics and how one can fudge crimes. If you don't report it as a felony, then felonies go down. And Larry Krasner
taught
us that.
Another show.
And I
hear what you're saying. Yes.
And I want to invite our listeners to chime in. What do you think of the president's crackdown on illegal immigration? If you or your family have been personally affected, we want to hear your story. The number is 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. And we can also take your question or comment on our YouTube channel. Guy, I wanted to ask you, because about 9,000 people have been arrested in these ICE raids across the country. NBC has reported that roughly half of those people actually had like criminal backgrounds. A lot of people who are law abiding individuals, even though they are undocumented, have been swept up in these raids. And so I want to get, you know, your impact. That's like 50%-ish, give or take a few percentage points. Is this new effort really working? Because I think a lot of Americans agree that people who commit crimes, especially violent crimes, and they're undocumented, should be deported. But a lot of people who haven't committed crimes are being thrown in there. Your thoughts on that?
Sure. I think also we should be aware that in these early days, I know it feels like a long time because they've been moving at lightning pace, but the Trump administration's been in office less than 30 days. So a lot of these initial raids is based on data and information that was given to them by the prior administration. So the system needs to be clear up. Again, I don't think anybody that's here legally should be stopped. I don't think you should be stopped walking down Market Street. I don't think you should be stopped at work. But if 50% are here illegally and have committed crimes and are violent, they don't need to be here. I would tell them to do a better job of not getting people who don't need to be caught up, but I'm glad they're getting those. This is imperfect. Again, I would prefer the system worked perfectly. It hasn't, but they are getting some people, and I think that that's important for the safety and well-being of citizens, and it also sends a message around the world to other governments and to other people not to send people here who are violent. Again, people who are here who have committed crimes, people who are holding rallies and burning American flags is not exactly what we're thinking about. I don't want anybody who's here for the right reasons caught up in that. But we needed to change the pace. We needed to change the focus. So let's work to make sure that anybody who stopped, that they're right 100% of the time. But I'm just glad that they're finally focusing on it, because for 4 years we didn't. The number of people being arrested was zero.
Yeah.
Let me read in some comments now, because we have a lot of them. Felicia emails.
They're coming in.
The current administration's policies are cruel and indefensible. They are mostly rounding up peaceful, law-abiding, hardworking people, not hardened criminals. Ross from South Philadelphia, slightly different perspective. I'm all for having more immigrants in this country. They are essential for our economy, but I take issue with people who are here for 20 years and don't learn English. Let me bring in a caller now from Easton, Pennsylvania. This is John on line three. We're coming up on a break, John, so try to keep it brief. You're on Studio 2.
Thank you, Abby. I sure will keep it brief. Unfortunately, most arguments that I'm hearing sound like fear-mongering. Are really the percentage of immigrants more likely to commit crimes than Native American citizens? I don't think so, and I'd like to hear statistics on that. Most of the people who come here as immigrants come here to make a life for themselves. That's what the American dream is. They're not here to commit crimes. They're not here for benefits. They're here to work and make a life. And I think you're mischaracterizing them by claiming that 50% of those picked up are committing crimes. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say, Abby. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Thanks for that call. That was John from Easton, Pennsylvania. So we are coming up on a break. I'm going to give out the number one more time, 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org or keep those comments coming on the YouTube live stream. And on the other side of this break, I want, you know, I still want to try to drill down, Guy, on this, and Anuj as well, on this idea of beyond this tone setting of the early stages of this crackdown, what would potentially come next, and what should it look like if we're trying to, as Guy says, get to zero, or if you have a different path, Anuj, like what beyond this initial phase of obviously making a lot of noise, what should the substance be behind it, and what would that do to a city like Philadelphia
and our economy
or our region? So again, studio2@whyy.org as we get to that break. 888-477-9499. I'll shut up now and let the music carry us. We'll be back on Studio 2.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and we are talking about President Trump's immigration crackdown and the ripple effect it's having in our region. The president has ordered ICE to increase raids, has promised to deport millions of people, and wants to end birthright citizenship. Our guests are conservative commentator and writer Guy Shiraki and Welcoming Center CEO Anuj Gupta. Of course, they have differing views on this topic, although, as we have learned, some common ground as well.
And we are asking you, our listeners, what do you think of the president's crackdown on illegal immigration? What are you seeing in your neighborhoods? If you or your family have been personally affected, we would love to hear your story. You can call 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on our YouTube channel, be sure to drop your comments in the live chat.
Let's bring in another caller now, because before the break, I talked about this idea of what the actual mechanisms of the solution would look like once we get beyond these early days. So I think Rudy from South Jersey on line three has an idea. Rudy, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an immigrant. I've been in the U.S. for 35 years. I've been here legally. I came legally, and I'm a U.S. citizen now. And I work with the Hispanic community. And from my experience, 99% of the people I work with, they're very good people. They come here with their families to have a life. But the question is that I always find that I don't see any penalties for employers who hire these undocumented people. If there were severe penalties, these people wouldn't have work. They would go back to their countries. But the reality is people hire them because they pay them less wages. And if we were to deport 11 or 12 million people, as Donald Trump said, we're going to have to shut down all the restaurants, all the hotels, all the fruit and produce that we pick up. Anyway, so that was my comment slash question
Thank
regarding
you.
Employers and what will be the consequences. Thank you.
Great
call.
Thank you so much,
Great call
Rudy from South Jersey.
So that's an interesting idea, right? The way that it seems to be approached right now is use the government to deport people who are there.
Yeah.
The other thing you could do is just remove the incentives that have brought people here, and perhaps then they would return on their own volition to their countries of origin, if indeed that is your goal. I mean, Guy Shiraki, what do you make of that?
So I think that makes sense. Again, I think what we're trying to do is several things. One is secure the border so that we stop having this sort of problem. The second is make sure that anybody's here who is committed a crime back where they came from or committed a violent crime here goes away. Beyond that, I think you start to look at the then what? What do you do with the folks that are here? We have all been, again, Republicans have not been perfect either, right? We have talked about not letting these folks come here and work, yet nobody really does anything to stop that. It has artificially depressed wages. It has had other ripple effects, right? So we need positive immigration for the country to grow in population and to keep up with the economy. What we don't want are wages artificially suppressed. We don't want people working in unsafe conditions and unable to say anything because they're here illegally. At the same time, we want security. So each of these things that we're talking about is a piece of the problem or a piece of the solution. But to me, you needed this sort of timeout. You needed to blow the whistle. You needed to say stop because what was happening the last 4 years was unsustainable. It was unsustainable economically. It was unsustainable in the criminal justice system. And it was unsustainable to our social safety net. Bringing in millions of people here from anywhere, bring them in from Italy. If you bring in 8 million people who don't have jobs, who don't have jobs waiting for them, who don't have a family, who don't have a social safety net, it's unsustainable. Our schools and our hospitals and our social services can't handle it. We need to get back to a point where people are coming here because they're either genuinely seeking asylum or they're here because they want to participate in the American dream.
And I knew you had a comment.
Couple of comments. Number one, 50% of the job creation this country has seen since the pandemic-fueled crash in 2020 has been filled by foreign-born talent. And that's a number that the Congressional Budget Office has put out, okay? So our economy has more than enough room for everyone. In fact, we desperately need them. We're not just talking about farm workers or restaurant laborers. We are talking about every profession in every industry. And I want to just give you a sense of the transformative impact that immigration can have on a community. And I'm going to say this as a compliment to Guy, who served as president of the Chester County Chamber of Commerce, correct? Mm-hmm. So here's a little fact about Chester County. Chester County grew between 2005 and 2022 by about 40,000 people. One of the few counties in Pennsylvania that experienced growth. 60% of that growth was through immigration.
Right.
60% of it. And just to highlight the profile of who's coming in, nearly 60% of the foreign-born population in Chester County has a bachelor's degree or higher.
Yeah.
Okay. And in Philadelphia, a city that started a precipitous population decline in 1950 that didn't end until 2007, the only reason it turned around, the story that's been told is it was empty nesters and millennials moving in the city.
Yeah,
that happened. Yeah. Those numbers are very small. It happened because we regained our posture as an immigrant destination. Over 100,000 net new foreign-born residents have come to call this city home over the last 15 years. They have started an entrepreneurial burst of entrepreneurial activity. They account for disproportionate rates of the city's tax base.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's the real picture of immigration in this country.
Yeah. But okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to make sure we bring in, we have a bunch of callers kind of on the line and a bunch of comments. I want to bring in Dave, who is in the cranberry business, who wants to provide a comment. Dave, you're okay. on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yeah. In fact, you know, I'm just curious what farms you're getting statistics from. My family's in a cranberry business, and they have a beautiful co-op program in South Jersey with Ocean Spray. And the last caller touched upon it. It really comes down to employer doing the right, doing the due diligence and getting the right working papers for these for the immigrants coming in, migrants coming in to do the work. I think the ones they're going to be going after is the ones that are not morally doing the right thing, and they're not paying good wages. They're not paying their workers' comp. They're the ones that you have to watch out for, because they're the ones that are bringing in the bad apples.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dave.
Yeah, my point is that everybody's doing it right down here. They got all the support they have, and I don't see it down here in South Jersey.
Thank you so much, Dave. And so I wanted to ask this question that kind of ties with what Dave is saying, and Anuja kind of underscores your commentary about immigrants sort of providing jobs, filling jobs and sort of helping the city grow and starting businesses. We've created this demand, Guy. There's businesses who literally rely on this base of workers. And right now we have this new policy shift. There is a chilling effect happening in communities. What are businesses who've become reliant on these workers? What are they to do in the interim?
Sure. Well, I think it depends on the business, right? I mean, a lot of the things that Anoush talked about in Chester County, the fastest growing segments of our immigrant population are folks from China and India who are coming to work in businesses in Chester County. They have advanced degrees because they're working at Vanguard and Bentley Systems and biopharma companies. They're contributing to the economy. And come on in. You know, there are two homes for sale in my neighborhood. Come be there. The reality is, I do think, and this goes to Avi's point, I do think there has to come a point where the Trump administration has to give a warning shot to businesses and pick a date forward. Mm-hmm. You know, starting August 1st or starting December 1st, we're going to start looking, right? Because as a practical matter, if you say we're coming for everybody right now, A, they don't have the manpower, and B, we're not prepared for the ripple effect. But I do think if you say starting December 1, we're going to start spot checking businesses to see that you're hiring people properly, I do think some people will leave. I think some people will leave voluntarily, but also businesses. This is as much about fixing what's wrong now about stopping it for the future. And I think a lot of what's happening now is looking backwards, but I think it's about for the future, because what we had was unsustainable. And I do think there's a way, again, I do think we can say, secure the border, know who's coming in, properly take care of genuine refugees, but let's work on fixing the economy. That's what we used to do. Do you have a host family or do you have a job? Otherwise, we can't sustain. We can't give free medicine, free college, free cars, and free housing to everybody in the world who's poor who winds up here. If you have a job or you have a family infrastructure and you're willing to be part of the process, then yes.
On that point, though, I mean, by a lot of objective measures, the economy was doing pretty well. So this idea that it was unsustainable from an economic perspective, I want you to flesh that out a little bit, because it did seem like that the workers coming from other countries, whether they're undocumented or otherwise, were meeting a genuine demand within the labor market, and that the economy writ large was functioning okay, whatever measure you want to look at.
Sure, but it wasn't functioning from the national budget, where we're going broke. And Texas was crying and screaming they needed help. And Illinois was screaming and saying they needed help. And Colorado and New York. So maybe the restaurants, the construction firms, maybe they were doing okay. What wasn't doing okay was the national budget. What we were paying out for aid, for Medicare, for Medicaid, for Social Security, for welfare, what we were paying out to house people in apartment buildings and hotels. That part wasn't working. So it is possible that some folks or even many were finding jobs, but many weren't. What was unsustainable is you and I and our kids can't keep paying. We can't afford a federal government that's taking care of citizens. If we're going to try and run a federal government and a social safety net that's going to take care of American citizens and everyone who comes over the border, it is unsustainable because our kids will go broke paying for it.
Yeah, your response to that.
I want to make sure we stick with facts here because people coming to this country do not get free cars. They do not get free college. And those cost burdens, the reason there was complaint from both governors and mayors, like Eric Adams, was because they were bearing the brunt of the cost. The federal government was not reaching into its coffers. The Biden administration was not reimbursing them. Now, if what you are suggesting is correct, and we agree on this, we need a better way to pay for some of these things, whether they're entitlement programs or otherwise. That means we need to increase our tax base. How do you increase the tax base? Not by reducing the number of people in your economy. You actually have to enlarge it.
And you're saying through immigration.
Yes. And here's the thing, that the sort of paragon of Republican policy orthodoxy was Ronald Reagan. And there has been no president since Lyndon Johnson that got this issue better than Reagan, who looked at the number of undocumented individuals in this country during his administration and said, if we are to deport all of them, even back then, we're talking, what, 85, 86?
Yeah.
We would shut down major sectors of the economy. So he created a pathway towards legalization.
Do you believe that is the solution today?
That is the only solution. If we're serious about economic opportunity for everybody, if we're sort of writing the last chapter on this country, sure, send people out of this country.
And we only have about 3 minutes left in this discussion, so I got to get this in because we're at a situation now where a lot of municipalities may need to try to protect their business sector because they are reliant on these workers who are undocumented and could be subject to deportation. Are there any tools in the toolbox for municipalities, for cities, for anyone who's trying to protect their worker base? And Anuj, I'll ask you, and God, please weigh in.
Yeah. At the moment, we still have a constitution in this country, and we still have protections against unreasonable search and seizure. All right? So we need to start with both business owners and individuals knowing their constitutional rights. If armed federal agents show up at your door, your business door, your home, what have you, they still need a valid judicial warrant to search the premise. They need to identify who they have come to arrest. Now, if we get to the point where those thresholds don't matter anymore, I have no words for that. But so that's one thing that both local leaders in the business community, elected officials, NGOs can do. Number two, This city has led the way. We are the largest certified welcoming city in America. Keep in mind, I did not use the word sanctuary city. Mm-hmm. There are underlying policies, policy choices, investments that mayors, Mayor Kenney, Mayor Nutter, made in the last 15 years that have made this place, this city, a destination for immigrant talent from around the world. And we should insist that those policies continue.
Yeah. Guy, did you have any commentary on what you think business owners can do to protect their workers?
Well, I think business owners are obligated to follow the law. And first and foremost, so no one should be here that is undocumented. And what they should do then is participate in the political process. If the answer is that we can't function as a hotel, as a restaurant, as a construction company, as whatever it may be, as a biotech company without people, then there's a way to do it. The answer is not to open the doors, let folks in, and we'll figure it out later. We tried that method. It failed. There are safety issues, there are rule of law issues, and there are budgetary constraints. It's time we address those. It might be messy along the way, but I think step one is security, and step two is taking care of our budget, and then we can figure it out. We can grow the economy and keep people safe. We tried it the other way of bringing people in here undocumented. It resulted in a lack of safety and a lack of confidence in the system, and it was becoming overly expensive. I'm glad we're finally addressing it.
And I just want to make sure we mention this because many of our commenters did. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the fact that there was this bipartisan bill, this immigration bill, that the soon-to-be president, Donald Trump, sort of helped orchestrate the killing of. And so people are skeptical that he is serious about long-term solutions. But look, if we had long-term time to talk about this, yes, like another hour, we could get into all that. We don't. It is the end of the show today, but I am sure we'll be talking about this more in the future. Thank you so much for the calls and the comments today.
A lot of them, yes.
And thank you, Guy Shiraki, former GOP nominee for Congress, conservative commentator, writing for Broad and Liberty and Rio Clear, Pennsylvania, and Anuj Gupta, CEO of the Welcoming Center.
Yes, thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
And thank you to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Coates. Thanks to Mike Schiffler, our visual producer, Al Banks, and Tina Calicay, engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory from Studio 2, right here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We will talk to you tomorrow.